Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Well, this month on Fire Marshal's Corner, we've got two topics we're going to be talking about. The first is a series of arson fires that had plagued Northampton, Massachusetts. In a very short period of time, they had a significant number of fires break out, and it really challenged the fire department in terms of responding to these and handling them, and also the aftermath, too, in terms of the investigation. Unfortunately, the fire did claim the lives of two people and caused some significant damage, but it was an excellent lesson learned for the fire department and also showed the value of pre-planning and preparation and working with the communities in your area so that when these do happen, everybody was able to swing into action very seamlessly and successfully. And then we're going to be talking with National Association of State Fire Marshals about their new project called Bridging the Gap. It's website they're developing to serve as an information portal about green fire safety, or in other words, the problems, or not problems, but the issues concerning green buildings in today's fire safety community. So with that, why don't we get into the show? Okay, joining us now is Captain John Garapi and Chief Brian Duggan from the Northampton Fire Department. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Last month, there were a series of fires that went through Northampton, all within, I think, like a 90-minute period of time. And, you know, any fire is a challenge, but when you have just fire after fire on top of each other, it certainly creates a very unique challenge that they have to face. And Captain Garapi was the officer on duty that night, and I'd like to ask him to talk about that. And then Chief Duggan's going to talk about managing it from the EOC level in the city. And then we're going to kind of wrap up by talking about how the Northampton Fire Department was ready for these many incidents coming one right on the heels of each other and how training and everything pays off. So, Captain, maybe we can start with you, and if you just kind of step us through the series of events that happened that night.
Okay, well, the Northampton Fire Department, first off, is a department that runs both ambulance and fire. That night, I had 12 members on duty. And prior to these alarms coming in, I actually had a engine company and an ambulance go up to one of the local nursing homes for a reported cardiac arrest. Then, while they were on scene there, somebody grabbed the officer up there and said that they had needed a second ambulance because they had another patient had taken a fall. So, prior to that whole thing starting with the multiple structure fires, I had one engine company with three guys on it freed up at that point that wasn't assigned. So I had the dispatch center do a tone out for coverage for people to come back in and backfill some slots, which was probably one of my best things I did now in hindsight. And then all of a sudden we get the report of the structure fire. The good thing about it is the engine company that was on scene was able to redeploy themselves in conjunction with working with the ambulance crews. They thought they were able to handle the situation there and come to the fire as well. So I rolled in with basically two engine companies to a fully involved structure fire at that point.
Okay. And so the first call came in at what, like 2 in the morning, I think it was?
Yeah, a little after 2 o'clock, yep.
Right, okay. What happened after that? I mean, things really started moving, escalating pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Arrived on scene. I was the first one on scene from the fire department. From the Charlie side of the building and Bravo Corner down that way, massive amounts of fire up in the air over the top of the building. Immediately went to a second alarm knowing that I didn't have any ambulance crews to come in and back me up. I was going to need some ambulance coverage. I was going to need some more men. So I struck a second alarm, instructed crews when they arrived on scene. Their assignments, you know, fire attack, water supply, search and rescue. PD on scene was awesome. They were able to tell me that they confirmed that everybody was out of the building when we got there, so we did a quick primary search through the building, found nobody else just to confirm that, and crews were able to go right into to working that structure fire. Now, when you have two engine companies come in, you have three guys on one engine and four on the other, and me as the OIC, you're still pretty limited in what you can do. We know we're going to be looking at 20 minutes to a half an hour before we have our own guys coming back into the station. We're waiting for mutual aid. That's going to take about 10 minutes to get there. So we figured at that point, all right, we got to work really hard for about 20 minutes, then I can start rotating crews through and give guys breaks. And then I hear from dispatch over the radio that we have another structure fire. Being one street over, the first thing in my mind was, well, maybe somebody woke up, smelled some smoke from this fire, and thought their house was on fire. But we sent an officer was right there. He went around the corner and investigate, and at that point informed me that, yes, the fire was out, but there was another fire. Immediately my mind went into, holy cow, I think there might be somebody running around here starting these fires. And then it just escalated from there with, another fires coming in, being able to deploy resources. I had to know what was coming in for engine companies from other communities around us and start deploying them while working the problem of the fire that I'm on now.
Now, and one thing that was mentioned to me, too, is that you'd only been on duty as a battalion chief. What, this was your fourth time?
Yeah, it was my fourth time working as a battalion chief that night, yeah.
Boy, so it's quite honestly a trial by fire, that's for sure.
It certainly was, and I didn't have anything pretty much leading up to this. My whole experience as a battalion chief working, as one, was a pretty uneventful. Just a couple single engine company responses, some ambulance calls. It pretty much was more or less the paperwork side of the business up until this point. And this certainly was. Felt like I certainly was tested to the limits on this one.
Yeah. Now, according to the media, the number of fires ranges all the way from about a dozen up to 20 different fires were coming in within a very short period of time. Certainly a challenge in terms of managing all the resources coming in. And calling on mutual aid from the area towns, here in Massachusetts, mutual aid isn't something that's frequently, it's not infrequent, but it's not all that frequent either. Brian, at some point in time, you came in here as well to help start managing this. At what point were you coming in on these incidents?
Well, as soon as John escalated to a second alarm, that resulted in all off-duty chief officers being toned out, and I was about 15 minutes away, but came into what really became a series of unprecedented events, not only within the city of Northampton, but across the Commonwealth, both in Marshall Cohen's experience and mine, 22 years as fire chief, we've never seen or sort of heard of anything like it. We had multiple reports that sort of challenged the department. I'm really pleased to say that the folks did great, stretched themselves, and the department more than met that challenge with the help of mutual aid. As I came into the city, I think John says he was glad to hear my voice, but we started assessing sort of from the multiple scenes how could we deploy mutual aid resources with a minimum of two engine companies and a chief officer to each one. So I had two other chief officers and myself coming in. We split those up. We then had three other chief officers coming in from adjoining communities with their mutual aid assignments, and we ended up assigning them to their own fire scene, something that it's normal for mutual aid to sort of go to a fire scene and help out. It's abnormal to go to a fire scene, have other mutual aid companies joining your companies, and as an out-of-town chief, manage an incident completely to the point that they even had to write the reports because we never had any eyes on that fire. So it certainly was an exceptional set of circumstances that resulted in us moving from the two ambulances that were out, as John said, to 47 minutes later with several reports of fires. I had visited four fire scenes and then determined that we needed to open the city EOC, and that happened 47 minutes after John had struck the second alarm. So very quick and rapid progression. We brought 14 communities in from mutual aid. And again, what's abnormal is I think it even shocked some of those communities that they weren't coming in for cover assignments or to even go to a single fire, but they were actually being deployed to their own fires. And I had a chief officer from Amherst, who's two towns over, say that they could not believe that they'd pull up alone at a fully involved structure fire, which was the case with myself and an ambulance being the only other Northampton resources there at the time.
And this must have been a big ripple effect, too, because each of those communities then has to backfill as well for coverage. So beyond the 14 communities coming into you, there must have been a lot of others being activated and mobilized as well.
Yeah, there were some move-ups, and ultimately it ended up once we get past the 14 communities and looked at operational periods 2 and 3, we really activated the state fire mobilization plan, bringing, in essence, two task forces to bear on the city of Northampton and to then have the availability to cover the outlying areas that were affected as well. So that was a good move. In retrospect, one of the things that we've seen is there really needs to be a chief officer at the control point to then manage those outside areas and assess the level of coverage in need, because some places that we thought would be really in need of coverage weren't, and others that we really didn't identify were.
Mm-hmm. All right. I know that, you know, John, this being your fourth time as a battalion chief here, what kind of planning and preparation and training did you have coming into an incident like this?
Honestly, I don't think you could ever train and prepare for an incident of this magnitude. I mean, this certainly was well beyond anything I could ever imagine happening in a small community, you know, Northampton. The best thing I could tell you is one of the big things was we train on the incident command system around here. We use it on every call. If an engine and ambulance go out, they establish command. We work with it, and basically I just expanded upon that. Basically, I had to work the problem. I knew we had multiple fires in multiple locations. I started establishing command, sending resources. The resources that we work with work well within that system. So the incident command system is probably one of the big things that helped here. Everybody was on the right channels for radio. Communications went well. I know there's some YouTube tapes out there. If you listen to it, everything's very calm. It's working the problem, coming into it and saying, what's next? You know, and as they kept throwing, you know, situations at me, I had a no in my head, because believe it or not, I didn't have a pad or a pen on me. I was actually involved in fighting the first fire, and just having to keep everything tracked in my head where everything was for the first 15 to 20 minutes to get everything going out. Mm-hmm. And saying when fire alarm would call me and say, we have another report of a structure fire, knowing who's coming in, roughly how long it's going to take them to get here, and then redeploying them to that location. The other thing that made it very easy for me on that scene as well is the fact that the crew that I was here, and not just that crew, but this whole department, has some of the best guys I've ever worked with in my life. I mean, you know, in private industry before coming in a firefighter, and even now, I mean, you can trust them. You don't have to micromanage them. You can tell them, give them a task, and they'll report back to you, and it's done. You don't have to check it. They're really some of the best firefighters I've ever worked with, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah. And, you know, that takes care of John's training kind of at the street level, so to speak. Brian, in terms of bringing in and activating the state plan and everything else, you know, what goes into making that happen so successfully?
Well, I think we almost need to sort of take a step back. About a decade ago, just after I was brought into Northampton, one of the main things we did is start some planning and training. So there's been a lot of investment in our people. Most of our people, including John, went to the Mass Chief Fire Officer Program. Everyone that has come on has gone to the Mass Fire Academy Recruit Program as a mandatory standard, and Firefighter 1 and 2 are sort of basic minimums of competence. But I think the planning also goes beyond that one of the things we have is a 10-alarm run card where actually at the 6th alarm we activate the state fire mobilization plan. That's divided into 3 areas across the city for districts and brings in the appropriate resources. So that pre-planning really helped as an aid to manage something like this. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other things we do is with officers' meetings, we'll do a fire problem at pretty much every officer's meeting to bring everyone to the same page tactically. I think other things that sort of play into that is not only the recruit stuff, but the Chief Fire Officer Management Training and the National Fire Academy Executive Fire Officer Training, where you get the command and control courses. And I know one of the things that it was a few years ago, we had a structure fire downtown and we had gone to a 3rd alarm. One of my captains said, you're driving me crazy because it sounds like you're ordering a cup of coffee when you're escalating to the 3rd alarm. That type of composure, I think, allows you to analyze the situation. And it's been amazing how that has spread throughout the organization. And as John mentioned, the YouTube tapes that are out there, he has sort of the same calm demeanor that I have as the situation escalates, and I think that's a foundation. The other thing is it's sort of practice as you play. years ago, Northampton really never went anywhere for mutual aid and never called for mutual aid. Well, that's changed, that mutual aid is becoming sort of a daily operational necessity, but also interaction with the state fire mobilization plan. That Northampton has been part of more than 20 task forces over the years, and I actually lead the state fire mobilization plan for the four counties of Western Mass. So having that exposure to the plan, having that participation and experience, I think really helped to lead to a successful outcome. I'm not sure that we truly saved lives that night, because as John said, the police department did an excellent job assessing for us and making sure people were clear of incidents, but the response certainly saved hundreds of thousands of dollars in property as I assessed the city and escalated the situation.
Now, unfortunately, two people did lose their lives in these fires, which is a terrible tragedy, but it sounds like it could have been a lot more than that. And now the big question becomes kind of the aftermath, and I'm not sure how much you can talk about, because we certainly don't want to impact any sort of investigation going on, but I think managing the investigation of this many fires afterwards, I mean, there are certainly a lot of players involved in that part of it, weren't there?
Absolutely. This was the first set of fire deaths in the city in over 12 years, so that sort of shook the city. The city reaction, by the way, it's something that we didn't totally anticipate. It was much like a terrorist attack, that people were truly scared and fearful, and perhaps we can touch on that in a moment. But in terms of the investigation, sort of after fire control, things immediately swung to preserving scenes and bring in the appropriate resources, really bring in sort of mutual aid for any fire investigator in the region, coupled with state police, state fire marshal, local police, all working together to analyze and secure those scenes. That then spread to between the district attorney and the state fire marshal's office, forming a task force that did an incredible job. I saw a picture the other day, and there were probably 30 people involved, just leading different agencies ranging from local agencies to federal agencies, and the integration of those in cooperation truly, I think, contributed dramatically to this outcome that we have today.
Did the ATF bring in one of their task forces on this?
No, they didn't bring a task force. They provided some representation.
Okay, all right. But yeah, even so many players, just to make sure that everybody's on the same sheet. So as you said, the scene preservation, evidence, interviews, everything else, it's so critical in the aftermath. And I think a lot of departments maybe don't really think that through completely. You know, they're so focused on the firefighting aspect that the aftermath requires just as much incident command structure, if not more, than firefighting, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually did some unique things, and this is based on over the past year or so, we've had some sort of press gadflies taking little shots at us over how we fought a fire out of the water district or an apartment fire, where we performed as a traditional fire department and did an excellent job at those fires, mm-hmm. but these people almost manipulated others after the fact to have a negative impression of the fire department. Coming out of this, we chose to see what we could learn from those lessons and how could we apply it. So we did some unique things of, as we got into operational period 3 and 4, holding some mutual aid, bringing in and mobilizing the chaplain's corps and going door to door on 50 houses surrounding each one of the many fire scenes. Just checking on people. Are they okay? Do they have questions? Providing them with sort of a sense of reassurance and public confidence. That was a tremendous hit. When my people heard of the idea, they were reluctant to go out based on some past history of sort of being blamed for things, even though they did an exceptional job. After they experienced this, they couldn't wait to do more because people were coming out of their house, giving them coffee, hugging them, thanking them, crying on them. And it truly was a city in fear that I think we embraced an opportunity to help the city as well as provide a sort of that reassuring presence for the public. That was then followed by the next night we went out and staged in areas and went door to door in every neighborhood on each house that was on a street that was affected. We handed out things that people could do as a flyer, as well as a letter from me that talked about the response, the unprecedented nature of the situation, the unprecedented use of mutual aid, and reassured people that we had a plan going forward. And then in the following nights, we continued to do those type of things, transitioning to more public venues, but also doing either roving patrols or pre-positioning and staging apparatus for a period of time. And, you know, we're in the middle of winter. The temperatures are single digits to teens at night. And I have to tell you, our people not once complained that they were cold or uncomfortable. They wanted to be out there and do this. And the community reaction has absolutely been phenomenal. So in terms of what someone could learn in sort of managing an event, is that aftermath, I believe, is as critical as the firefighting efforts themselves.
And it's my understanding that a suspect has been arrested in connection with one of the fires?
That's correct.
All right. Well, what we'll be doing is keeping people up to date here on the page here as that evolves, because it's obviously going to take some time for the results of that to come out. And if you look below on the page, you'll see some links to some of the news stories that have been going on, some of that YouTube footage that's referenced, of the radio traffic and such. So we'll really keep people up to date on the page here of the as this evolves, because it certainly was a pretty unique event, certainly for any community, certainly for Northampton. And I must say that you guys did very, very well. So my hat's really off to you, John, for being in the hot seat right there in the very beginning. And Brian, my compliments to your department for the excellent job they did on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate that.
All right. So stay tuned here to Fire Marshal's Corner. We'll have more on this incident as it evolves.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Okay, joining us now in Fire Marshal's Corner is Alan Schumann, who's the Georgia State Fire Marshal, but also the president of the National Association of State Fire Marshals, and Karen Deppa from NASFAM, who's also a project manager for the particular project we're going to be talking about. So I thank you both for taking the time to join us here on Fire Marshal's Corner.
Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Why don't we start with you, Alan? Maybe you can give a little bit of description about this project, what it's about, and what NASFAM is going to be doing.
Well, a little bit of history. It's the object of the project is to develop a forum for sharing information among code officials, firefighters, and other stakeholders to address what we see as a divide that currently exists between established fire safety practices and the new technologies and criteria being used in what is known these days as green building design. NASA wants to be a help and educate the fire service so that we can facilitate the growing trend and at the same time make sure that safety, both public safety and emergency responders' safety, is being taken into account. But we have to also know at the same time we want to convey the idea that preventing fires in buildings is a good thing for the environment overall. So that's basically where we're kind of going with the objectives of this program.
Well, we'll get into the how you're doing it, you know, phase of this in a minute, but what do you see as some of the gaps? What are some of the concerns that NASFAM has about this gap that you're seeing between existing building practices and green buildings?
Well, maybe some of the one of the points we can bring up is the issues that it's maybe we need to be in the forefront of some culture change or cultural thinking regarding fire safety and green. Sometimes you hear the comments that maybe the sprinkler system is not green or it's not renewable or whatever the comment may be. Sprinklers put fires out, so we have to develop a bridge or develop a way to educate folks on the environmental side, on the design and the building side of the equation, that there are fire safety issues out there that do need to be addressed while we go along with this new terminology and technology and the reusables that we're having out there.
And turning to you, Karen, a little bit, and actually here's a little bit of full disclosure here. NASFAM has asked me to work on this project in terms of helping to develop the website and fill it out a little bit. So, Karen, maybe you can talk about the website a little bit and what the process has been on putting that together?
Yes. First and foremost, our project intends to be a clearinghouse for information and research and resources on the topic of green buildings and fire safety, as well as a place to allow the sharing of experiences among fire officials, both on the code enforcement side and the first responder side. So to that end, we're developing a website, and the address is www.greenbuildingfiresafety.org, and that's all one word. And the website is being set up to collect resources and information on many of these issues. The website also has a discussion forum for people to raise topics of interest and share their own knowledge and questions with others. So this is an opportunity to achieve some uniformity of approach and efficiency rather than having everyone go off and reinvent a different wheel to address the same issues. For example, the state of California has made a good deal of progress in dealing with some of these issues from a code enforcement and planning perspective, while New York City has done a lot to address the firefighting and operations side of green buildings. So all of this good information that's being developed out there can and should be shared more broadly. And so that's a major objective of our website. And then we're also working on a guide that will introduce the concept of green buildings to code officials and to firefighters and show them how to recognize green building design elements and systems and what the major objectives are to ensure safety from both a planning and an operations standpoint. And we're also looking at how different states and localities within the states are approaching green building requirements, if at all. And we're finding that in some states there's an effort to have a very uniform approach that originates at the state level of government. And in other states, the local government authorities have the autonomy to address green building design as they see fit. So we're going to be providing an overview of how each state deals with green buildings with links to specific ordinances and examples of major approaches. And that also will be featured on the website.
There's been a very strong effort going on with the International Code Council, ICC, to develop a new green building code, the IGCC, which is the first draft is on the street right now for public comment. And I've attended a few of those meetings. It's been really interesting because the room is predominantly environmental-focused type of people in there. And there are a few of us fire people in there, NASFAM one of them, providing input and comment into the codes. And I must admit, it is a real eye-opener for people on the environmental side, you know, looking at fire safety as an environmental issue, which, Alan, you had mentioned a culture change. I think it's going to be a culture change on both sides of the fence.
Oh, I agree.
Both the fire and the environmental folks. And, you know, really trying to, I think what we need to do is kind of talk their language as well to bring them into our arena here. Are you aware of any fire marshals that are taking this on as an initiative on their own to really make sure that they're understanding both issues? I mean, both the environmental issues and the fire issues?
I think every state fire marshal is trying to meet the challenge head on and to develop or at least communicate with both sides to be the facilitator that brings them together to focus on what the objectives are of meeting the green building criteria through the LEED certifications and others to help facilitate that. I think the fire marshals are being very proactive about that across the country.
And I must admit, you know, the site that's being developed is really going to be, well, certainly the only focal point that I'm aware of bringing all this together, which is great that you got the grant to pull this together, because I think it's something that's sorely needed. There's so many specific topical areas that we're going to be looking at as part of this, you know, alternative fuels, green roofs, indoor air quality, walls, solar power, you know, rooftop photovoltaic units. And, I'm seeing a lot of articles and hearing a lot of noise about fire departments doing it on their own individually, but I think, Karen, this is going to really serve to bring it all together and give them, like you said, that go-to place where people can exchange information. And that's really the big goal is an exchange of information, isn't it?
It is, and you know, in addition to all of the topics that you mentioned, Ed, we also hope to see, and we expect to see, all kinds of emerging technologies come out of the desire to continuously improve the energy efficiency and the carbon footprint of buildings. So we're hoping also that through this project, we can establish a mechanism for identifying those emerging technologies and evaluating their impact to fire safety in a timely way.
Yeah, because I think as much as we might try to identify all the topical areas, there's going to be so many more that we're just never going to think of, or just something totally new is going to come along that nobody thought about that's going to have an impact.
And, you know, one of the things that we want to make sure when we're talking about the various green building elements and their fire safety impacts is the acknowledgement that for the most part, each of these topics, for example, the vegetative roofs, the photovoltaic systems, the flammable plastics in skylights and other applications, there is a code enforcement planning aspect, and then there's also the firefighting operations aspect, and we want to be able to address both of those.
I mean, and you're hitting the nail right on the head there. For example, you know, with the advent of hybrid cars, where they'll now have to put charging stations inside of homes, residential homes, and charging stations inside of commercial garages and things. That's certainly an issue for the planning person responsible for planning and inspections, but also for the first responder. You know, what do you do when you're confronted with a fire involving, you know, a recharging station? I know there was a significant fire out in California recently involving a rooftop photovoltaic unit. And that's really different for a lot of people because now power is continuing to flow through that unit. Just killing power to the building does not kill the flow of power from a rooftop photovoltaic unit. So what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would agree with you, Ed, on that position because one of the issues that at NASM that we've tried to address is that with the new technology with the green buildings, an incident commander is going to show up to a building tomorrow, which is now today, which is not the same type of building he pulled up on 3 years ago, and there's different aspects of that building he's got to know about. So that's kind of that issue we want to address that Karen had mentioned, and you also, of we've got to deal with different issues not now and in the future. So having this website put together, the project put together, and having somewhere as a clearinghouse for folks to go to kind of bridge that gap of what we need to be looking at is certainly, I think, going to be best suited for everyone. And instead of everyone, like you had mentioned earlier, kind of taking on the responsibility individually. So, and NASM does have some history with alternative fuels and some other. I know we were very strong in the hydrogen executive leadership panel and other alternative fuels to develop the same type of leadership issues where we could go for additional training. So hopefully this will work.
And to help facilitate the exchange, there's going to be a discussion forum on the website. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, Karen?
Sure. It's going to be divided into the various topics based on green building elements and will be a place for people to go and post a question or talk about an experience or say, hey, I know of a resource that relates to this that, you know, other people ought to know about. So it's really going to depend, the success of the discussion forum is going to depend upon the participation of people who go and visit the site. So our major message for the listeners here is to check out this website that we're working on, and it is live. It's also still in development and will continue to be as we find more resources and issues and rethink the best way to present things. But www.greenbuildingfiresafety.org, people need to go and visit, look around, provide comments and feedback on the content, the design, participate in the discussion forum, and come back often because, like I said, it's a dynamic site that we're hoping to constantly improve and update.
Ed, can I add one comment?
Sure.
And this, and this is just not the National Association of State Fire Marshals putting this together. We do have a advisory working group, and some of the members are from the FM Global Green Building Initiative, the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the International Association of Firefighters, International Code Council, International Fire Marshals Association, National Institute of Standards and Technology. Many, many groups have come together to help make this an open and fair enterprise-type approach to getting this information out.
Yeah, because really all of this cuts across everybody's concerns, really. You know, and that's an excellent point, that it's no one arena that really has to address this. We all have to address it, and I think putting together a good collaborative project like this is just going to really help a lot. That's just absolutely excellent.
Yes, and we also recognize the importance of reaching out to the environmental and the green building communities so that they understand what we're trying to do and know that they're encouraged to participate as well. And so we're now taking steps to reach out to those communities and organizations and also identify other stakeholders that should have an interest in our efforts, such as building code officials, architects, organizations representing municipal and county officials, and industries that are making products and providing services for this market.
Well, we've been talking with Alan Schumann, the president of NASFAM, and Karen Deppa, who's a project manager with NASFAM, about the new project, Bridging the Gap. It's about developing a website that's going to serve as a focal point and an information exchange for fire safety and green buildings. So I really appreciate both of you taking the time to join us.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.